into a grant that was funded by the National Endowment for the Humanities to do an oral history on the contributions on the part of black civic citizens to the development of Ypsilanti. Today we're in the process of interviewing the Meshack family.
Right.
And what is your name?
Ken Meshack.
Ken Meshack, and your name?
Helen
Meshack.
Palmer,
okay. Where were you born?
I was born in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Okay.
September of 39.
And your parents' name?
My parents were Kenneth Allen Meshack and Helen Cole Meshack. They came to Ypsilanti and built a home. Back in the early 30s. In fact, the house I'm living in, my father built it, and his brothers. And back then, in Ypsilanti, back then, you know, they had moved blacks out of Depot Town because of the railroad tracks there, and they told put us up on the hill there. And they used to call it Hungry Hill. And in fact, when my father was going to get a permit to build the house, he took the blueprints down to City Hall, and they told him they didn't care what blacks put on the hill. He'd build a chimney out the window if he wanted to. And this is some of the attitude back then that was.
Could you tell me something about your family history? When did your father or his father's father first come to Ypsilanti and bring us on up to the present, like, in terms of historical type sequence?
Well, it goes back. Now, blacks, they don't have any written history mostly. It's mostly by word of mouth.
In oral tradition.
So I went and got birth certificates and death certificates of my father, my grandfather, my great-grandfather, which I could only get a death certificate of my great-grandfather because he wasn't born here. He came from Missouri. Now, that was my father's father's father.
What was his name?
That's just it now. I can't remember his name. My grandfather's name was Horace Meshack, and he spelled it M-A-S-H-A-T-T.
Okay.
Now, his father came from Missouri. My grandfather's father.
Right.
Now, in fact, from Springfield, Missouri, his father's father's father came from Louisiana. Now, this is where the Meshack, a lot of people say Meshack, French Canadian, but the French comes in from Louisiana. It goes back to Louisiana, and some of my aunt has told me different one that said the Meshacks were never slaves. They come here in Louisiana as French. But when my grandfather got in Missouri, not my grandfather, my great 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 grandfather, mm-hmm. and the Civil War broke out, he was considered slave.
Okay.
So he ran all the way to Canada. Now, he went to Canada and went up in New York and married a white woman.
What year do you think?
Oh, this was in the 1700s.
1700s?
Yeah, this had to be in the
1700s. Oh, the 1600s. Great-great-grandfather.
Because it had to be early in the 1700s. Because, you know, back then, when I asked about my grandma, my great-great-grandmother was a white woman from New York. And I said that only her first name, Charlotte, was on the certificate. And I asked the lady at the Ann Arbor, I said, how come you don't have my great-great-grandmother's last name on there? Say, well, back then, if a black married a white, the whites would disown them. And so they would only put the first name. So you can't trace her family back.
Yeah.
And I said, well, So that's how they knew that she was white, because there was no last name given, you know, on the certificate. Now this is what's told to me there at the register's office in Ann Arbor when I went to get these certificates.
So they resided in Ann Arbor then, eh? Eventually.
No, they resided here in Ipsy. Okay. Now my great grandfather was a well digger. Here in Ipsy.
What was his name?
I don't know my great grandfather's name. I could get it for you because it's up on record up here in Ann Arbor.
About what time period did they arrive in Ypsilanti?
Well, let me see this. My father. Let's see. My father was born in 1894. And he was the oldest son of Horace Machette, which is my grandfather. Now, my father was born in Ypsilanti, and his father was born in Ypsilanti. And I imagine there would be approximately 30 years difference in ages. So he probably come around the mid-1800s.
What kind of job? What was the occupation?
Yeah. Well, my grandfather, he was labored for Ford Motor Company.
Oh, okay.
He worked for Ford for 50 years, believe it or not.
Well, what year was this, around what time?
Oh, this was around the late 19... This was, I imagine, around 1912.
Right.
Or 1915. Yeah. He worked for Ford for many, many years. And my dad worked for Ford.
Okay.
Then my father, he built the house and fell off the house. And he went to the hospital there and died of heart trouble. Because of too much ether there at the hospital. I still believe they killed him, but you know, I can't say nothing about that.
Get back to your grandfather and his relative and the fact that he owned all the land over there by Easter.
Okay. Now, Grandpa, his daddy was a well digger, and they had a lot of land. And from what I'm told, it was from the water tower back toward Carpenter Road. They owned a whole lot of land over there. Right. It started right there at Washtenaw. And Washtenaw Water Tower, part of eastern Michigan is sitting on Meshat land. That they used on back over there.
Did they sell that land to?
I don't know how they disposed of the land. You know, I don't know. But it's on the tax ledgers for years back that they owned it. I don't know. My aunt says that he hocked the land for $50 to have a good title.
Mrs. Palmer, would you like to add anything to that discussion of the grandfather and the father's background coming to Ypsilanti?
No, Kenny and I have done more talking than anyone else about the land and about different things that have happened that he knows and has traced back, and what little I know, but I'm the oldest.
Okay.
Next to the oldest out of nine.
Okay.
And there's nine of us.
So there are nine brothers and sisters in total, right?
Well, eight right now. We lost a sister some years back.
Okay.
And now, if you want to know, like, I think this needs to go down in history as far as Ypsilanti. Back in 1971, the first black Afro-American festival was given in Ypsilanti which I was the founder of.
What I would like to do is, could you provide for me in the discussion your view of Ypsilanti as a child? What was black life like as a child in Ypsilanti growing up?
Okay.
Then I'd like to get your perspective view, Mrs. Palmer. Okay? So state your name again and
all right.
And respond accordingly.
I'm Ken Mishat, and life for me as a child in Ypsilanti was, and my early life was, I think, my most favorite life, because Harriet's Greek School was where I attended, and Mr. Beattie was the principal there. And we had a very good atmosphere of learning. At the same time, Ypsilanti as a whole was more racist and prejudiced. Now, I didn't understand it as a child, but we lived on dusty roads. I was in Ypsilanti before they got pavement and streetlights. And horses and chickens and cows and pigs run up and down the street. Regular country life.
What kinds of black leaders were there then, back during that time?
That's it.
Don't tell him.
I'm not. The black leadership at that time. Now, I'm speaking of when I was 8 and 5 and 6.
I'm talking about life.
Okay, as I graduated up.
Growing up.
Okay, as I come up, I found racism in the school system, because I was told right there at Ypsilanti High School that I could not be an architect because there's no black architects in this country. And this is when I was coming up. So there were certain things that they advised black youth for certain subjects that the fields weren't open to. Opportunities to go into that field at that time wasn't open to. The black leadership then was, in my estimation, somewhat poor. However, now let me straighten that out. However, the type of black in Ypsilanti was the get along, don't rock the boat type.
Name some names of ministers, preachers,
I can
teachers.
Name a few names. Dr. Amos Washington, Dr. Perry. Dr. Perry was the first black to ever serve as a Board of Education member. Amos Washington served as first black housing commissioner. We've had black leaders throughout. Ypsilanti's the first to have a black mayor, John Burton. The leadership then, as I was coming up, was, like I said, a get along. Now, we had some profound leaders. We had another man that used to live there in Italy who started the black communist chapter, Herbert Walker. Of course, they called him communist. I don't know. But Ypsilanti is, did you know that Ypsilanti is the last point going north for the Underground Railroad?
Tell me a little bit more about the Walker.
Herb Walker?
Yeah, in terms of your feeling that he was a very dynamic leader.
Well, I feel that he was a dynamic leader. I don't think that the blacks in Ypsilanti were ready for his type of leadership even back then.
But
tell me something about him. Where did he come from?
They came from Illinois. His family came from Illinois. The Church of God that you see on Jefferson started in his mother's living room. They're quite religious. His father was a Baptist minister.
Do you remember his mother's name?
Grandma, I don't know. Just Grandma Walker. Because everybody called her Grandma Walker.
Well, his daughter lives there, isn't she?
Yeah, right across the street.
What's his daughter's name?
Ruth Simpson.
Ruth Walker Simpson. Okay. Mm-hmm. But Herb lives in New York now. And he's He's an engineer well, I don't know if you want to call it that. Yeah, he's an engineer on the ocean liners. He's a seaman. And he lives in, he stays in New York when his ship is here, but he lives in the islands. He lives down in the islands. But he, I think, was, to me, a dynamic leader. I don't think the black leadership was ready for him at that time. But he wanted to organize blacks even way back there. But getting back to my day, you know, it was a shame that we had people in leadership position. And I do remember that a lot of times we wouldn't have swing and teeter-totters because the principal would turn the money back in to show how good of management he was, you know. We had to do without. Now, I'm not telling you hearsay, I'm telling you from what I experienced.
Yeah, okay. What would you say, or would you agree that in Ibsen Landing, in comparison with other places in this area, was more liberal in its feelings and treatment towards blacks, or more conservative?
I think it's not more liberal. I think it's covered up. Not so extrovert as introvert. You know, they had a way of covering it. I think it's the way it carried itself. I guess I was born with a lot of pride. But I remember one time my mother, after my father died, policemen came to the house. You know, my mother, she would open the door and feed anybody and let anybody stay there, because if they was homeless or in need.
What was your mother's name?
My mother's name was Helen Cole Machette. Her later years, she became a widow. She married Richard Ebert, who was my stepfather. But I remember this young man was down and out, and she let him come there and stay. And he was a criminal. Of course, she didn't know that. Didn't nobody else know that. And the law came there looking. And policeman stepped in house, state policeman, too. And she said, "Well, you remove your hat in my house." He said, "Well, I don't have to remove my hat. This is part of my uniform." And I remember that lady taking that broomstick and knocking his hat clean across the living room. And she said, "As long as you live, you take your hat off in my house, or you talk to me on my porch." And we never got messed with. When I say messed with, the worst thing I remember and experience in my life is when I first found out I was black.
And when did you find that out, and what impact did it have on you?
Well, I was 19 years old. I just joined the United States Army and joined the draft. They was drafted then, so they drafted us. Me and my neighbor went. Well, I come home on my way back, I stopped in Memphis, Tennessee. 2 o'clock in the morning. Okay? Nothing was open but a white grill. And I was hungry. I was sure enough hungry. And so I went to this grill and I said, "Listen, lady, big old redhead lady, white lady." I went in, I said, "Can I get a sandwich?" She said, "No, you can't get a sandwich." She said, "Get your black ass out of here." I said, "Well, what's wrong?" She said, "Well, we don't serve niggas here." Well, that didn't bother me too much. I said, "Well, look, all I want is something to eat. If you give me a sandwich, I'll leave." So she called the manager. He come out there and he said, "We don't serve blacks here. You got to go." And I said, "Well, I'm in a United States Army uniform." He said, "We're going to give you a sandwich, but you have to go outdoors to eat it." I never been treated like that before.
So life for you in Ypsilanti was like you really wasn't aware of the color.
Right. There was no color awareness there, not at that time. You at the same time you knew you were different, but you don't know that you were more or less oppressed until like I said, when things began to happen, then you realize it. But you see, this is one thing that blacks in Ypsilanti, and I don't understand all of it. We have a when I say we, because I include myself, we have a poor conception on what we should accept. You know, when I say what we should accept, what we should accept from society as being, hey, this is just a part of life, and this is the way it is. It's this man's world, and we just living in it.
So you really had no racial conception, race conception of you being black versus you just being treated a certain way because you were colored.
Right. Mm-hmm. You see.
Okay. While growing up, what were some of the various kinds of black businesses that you remember?
Oh, I always said that Ypsilanti is going out of the world ass backwards. You know, it's on tape now. So. Because when I was coming up, we had our own drugstore. We had a soda bar. We had a restaurant. We had two restaurants right there on Harry Street. Amos Washington had a grocery store. We had barbershops. We had a fish market. We had a pool room right there on Harris Street.
What were some of the names of the various owners of these businesses? Did you mention some of the names, like Amos Washington?
Well, Amos, Dickie, I don't know. What's Dickie's last name?
Atkins.
What did he
own? Pool room. And then there was the Bennetts. Dolores Bennetts owned the pool room there on Monroe and Hamilton. There was
a restaurant.
Can't think of who.
Mr. Bennett owned the restaurant.
But I remember when Morgan built the place down there, Lenar Morgan. And Glover's Fish Market. Glover had a fish market down there.
What was Glover's last name?
Harbert Glover.
Okay. Who is he?
He's a minister there in Ipsy.
Now?
Yeah, now. He's a minister.
What's the name of his church?
He doesn't have a church.
Okay.
He's associate minister at a congregation. There was Hall's Barbershop was there.
Oh, Goodman had
Goodman had a clothing store, Miss Goodman. You know, the mayor's daughter. Mayor's mother. Mm-hmm. She had a clothing store there. And then there was George Moore.
Who was he?
Cartwright. Had a restaurant. Reverend Cartwright. He had a restaurant.
But the Fullers
there
had a place when I was a girl.
And the Fullers had a restaurant there up under the
Fullers, what was their first names?
I don't know.
James was the only one I can remember.
James Fuller?
James Fuller.
Well, he had a sister named Beauty. Another one named.
But there was a whole lot of business.
There used to be a little restaurant.
What do you see as some of the reasons for many of these businesses either folding or closing down?
Well, most of them died.
Well, a lot of them died, but a lot of them had. There was no one to take up the action, take up the slack.
Take them over, yeah.
And then too, you know, there's not that get up and drive in Ypsilanti. Blacks, I always say blacks are most passive blacks in Ypsilanti. They're more passive than anybody I know. You got to kill somebody to get a riot started. Somebody has to die, or somebody has to burn down something before you can get the attention of the masses of blacks to see what is going on. Mm-hmm. And that's a very poor way. Mm-hmm. you know. This is exactly why what happened to the Youth on the Move and the Black Culture Festival. Now, they have a heritage festival now, and claiming it's the first. It's not the first. First festival was given right there at Park Ridge Park.
What year?
1971.
In the area of politics, were there many blacks in the area of politics here?
Well, you had, yes, Herb Francois was a politician. He's a realtor more than a politician, but he dealt in politics. John Burton, Mrs. Dorsey, and she stands out in politics. She's a real politician, more or less. And there's a lady that has more education in one finger than the whole city council got in the last 10 years.
You ought to talk to her.
What kind of influence did they have in decision making in politics? Was it minimal or was it substantial?
I think it was minimal. The reason why it was minimal, because they didn't take it to the street. And this is my argument. This has been my argument in Ypsilanti. Take it into the people. I remember when we got paved streets, sidewalks, and streetlights. Yeah, Mrs. Dorsey and John Burton, Amos Washington, and my mother, all of them went and petitioned. They had to petition the people in the area to have a city to put streetlights and sidewalks. Now, them four people who were major leaders as far as getting pavement and streetlights on the south side of Ypsilanti, man. All was trails. But what I'm saying is the people that were in politics, there's always been, I guess, in every black community, poor communication. And this is what has hurt the black politician in Ypsilanti. This is why I think the people are so passive, because when you get somebody in a position, then you lose contact. And poor communicator. That's right, Dr. Clark. He was one of the most outstanding doctors we had.
What was his first name?
Leo Clark's dad.
Yeah.
He was one of the first black doctors in Ypsilanti?
To my knowledge,
Yes, he was. And one of the best. Not only a black doctor, he was one of the best doctors.
Period.
Dr. Bass was a good doctor, and he is. He worked on us a many a day.
I want to take you back a little bit. Could you share with me any discussions or impressions that your father or your father's grandfather may have told your father, or what your father may have told you about how life was in Ypsilanti when it first came, you know, for black folk, you know? What was life like for them, you know? Did any of them ever, any of the old comments, anything that filtered down, you know, in terms of what your father?
Well, back in them days, the black man stuck together a little, because different homes that were built in Ypsilanti, they built them, you know, they had a lot of masons in Ypsilanti, brick mason, and well, masons was an organization, but them guys would stick there. You was going to build a house, they'd help.
The masons would help, right?
The people more or less stuck together.
Yeah, my dad was a
mason.
33rd
Mason.
So the masons tended to stick together and build homes here, you mean, for blacks? Or what would you say?
Well, not only mason. I've never been a mason, but I built at least 11 homes, or helped build 11, about 11 or 12 homes right there on Jefferson. Because it used to be a time in Ypsilanti where even when I was coming up. Now, see, my father died when I was 3 years old, so I don't know much about, you know, him.
But more or less, if man was going to do something in Ypsilanti, the neighbors and everybody would pitch in and help, more so than they do today.
Oh, they don't do that. I'd come home from school and my mother would have a little something, said, now you go down and help Brother Lewis. And Don't you get in his way. If he wants you to carry lumber, you carry lumber. If he wants you to mix mortar, you mix mortar. Do whatever he tells you to do.
My uncle was a licensed carpenter way back then.
Who was?
My uncle.
Was a carpenter?
Mm-hmm.
Here in Ypsilanti?
Mm-hmm.
What was his name?
Kersey. Arden.
Arden Kersey.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You built a lot of houses over. I don't know too many that he built on at this end. Well, most of the... When we moved, when did we come out here, Kenny?
I know we came here right after right before I was born.
All right, that's when we came, Gibson. When we moved on Jefferson.
That was around 28 or 30.
Okay. Because
I was born in 39.
At that end of Jefferson.
Must have been around 35.
There wasn't but two black families in that block when we moved up there. Three, old man Kersey.
Mixed marriage.
Yeah.
There's a lot of mixed marriages.
There always has been.
Your uncle Kersey had a mixed marriage?
No, no.
No, he wasn't. He wasn't an uncle.
We had two, let's see, Chuck and what's his name? There's a mixed marriage down the street, too. Duckett. Yeah, Mr. Duckett.
The Thompsons were mixed.
What was the Duckett's first name?
I don't know this. You know, now we go first name.
Yeah.
Back then, you know, it was Mr. Kersey, Mr. Duckett, Mr. Thompson.
And if they was old enough, they were either grandma,
like Mother Walker.
I never knew her first name as a child. And I'm over 50. We always called her Grandma.
Grandma Walker, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's Grandma Walker.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a lady in Ypsilanti. Now, to my knowledge, she's still living. I don't know if she's very senile. But her last name is Hardy. She married the Hardys was here when we came here.
Right.
They've been here a long time, too, the Hardys. And, Lord, she must be 100 years old.
She is.
She's living.
She's 100.
Is she black?
Yes. She lives right there on Jefferson.
On Jefferson.
She's over 100.
Yeah.
Mrs. Hardy.
Right down the street from me.
Right there on Jefferson.
And been living there ever since.
And my aunt's living, and she's about 90.
And it's Ypsilanti?
Yeah.
What's her first name?
Edna.
Okay, Misha.
Now she was born.
Edna Kersey.
Oh, Edna Kersey.
Right. She was
now
a Roderick.
That was my father's
mother's
sister.
Oh, okay.
The Kerseys.
Oh, that made us and related that Kersey.
Because there's two of them living. Mm-hmm. Edna and Dora are still living. In that particular family, because all the rest of them died. I remember my grandmother. But she was part Sioux and Blackfoot and black. She was part Indian.
Now, what was the year you say you think your family first came to Ypsilanti? Say the 18 something?
I said early 18s.
Early 1800s.
Right? Early 1800s. It might even go back to the last 17th. It might go back to the last 1700s because, like I said, my grandfather lived to be 97.
And he was born here, and he's been dead about 11 or 12 years.
You know,
so
you
that would be 100 years right there.
Mm-hmm.
See?
You have 9 brothers and sisters?
Yes.
Could you give me the names of each one, just for the record? Brothers and sisters?
Just for the record. Wow.
Yeah, I like your names.
That was
Frank Mashap, then Helen J. Mashap, then Thomas Cole Mashap, then Carolyn Ann Machette, and then Lillian Betty Machette. I'm going to put that Betty in because everybody called her. We always called her Betty. When she died, her name was Lillian, and half the people didn't know who she was because we always called her Betty. And then Shirley Machette Gray. No. And we'll come up to Shirley.
Kenneth Albert Mechette.
Kenneth Albert Mechette.
Marvin Keith Mechette.
And then
Sharon
E.
Mechette.
Mechette. Newton.
Okay.
Well, I didn't put my bomber on my name. I've been a bomber for 30 years.
if we were to look at the present today, how do you view black life in Ypsilanti today in terms of race relations, in terms of education, in terms of the leadership? Do you see any significant advances on the part of black leadership in Ypsilanti today as compared to yesterday in the past? And if not, why not? You know, share that with us.
Well, that's I think that that's a touchy, because I used to deal in politics a bit, and I used to get into city management. I was a county youth director from 71 to 74, and I dealt in a lot of educational problems and a lot of different kind of problems, and I've just refrained from dealing with those problems. I retired more or less and went into private life. I don't want to deal with the city. For one thing, I find that the leadership,
we don't stick together.
To me, the leadership in Ypsilanti is very passive leadership. Like I said, we have a lot of people who are passive, who don't believe in rocking the boat, who don't believe in... I guess I've been more or less a militant among whatever you want to call us, but this is the way I see it. As far as changes, I think there's a lot more opportunities for black. Now I'm not talking about citywide, I'm talking about nationwide, okay? Because citywide, I don't think we have that many opportunities. You have factories, I'm almost positive you have factories in Ypsilanti that you still don't have blacks in. They're small shops, but you have quite a few small shops in Ypsilanti that are still lily white. I think that if blacks are going to live and support the economic system in Ypsilanti, then they should share in some of the economic profits as those small shop factories that have maybe 20 and 25 men working in them. At least there should be five blacks somewhere in there. I don't see a great change in the as far as the labor structure, educational structure. Yes, we have a black mayor, and we have a black education counselor. We have a black principal at our Ipsy High School. But what I'm saying is, I guess we just need a lesson in what blackness is. Because I don't care if you're the black principal, but if you can't understand the needs of blacks, then you being a black principal don't mean you're the beans.
What do you see the role of black ministers today in Ypsilanti in terms of what they've been doing versus what they did in the past?
Well, in the past, I think black ministers played an important part in Ypsilanti as far as unity. I remember there used to be a community chorus made up of Baptist, Methodist, and Holiness churches. And every fifth Sunday, they would go to different churches, or every Sunday out of the month. One Sunday out of the month, we would have a community sing, the community chorus. It was led by Olive Evans, who was an outstanding school teacher and a music director. She was the first black to be a music director over the whole city of Ypsilanti. And she organized a community chorus made up of different churches. And the black ministers came together at these musicals. And boy, we used to have a time. However, now the attitude, I think, the atmosphere among black ministers is get it all for yourself.
This is my church, you stay in yours.
I don't think there's a black unity among black ministers.
Why do you think that's so, among the black ministers in the church?
Well, we've become materialists. We've become very conscious of finance. We've become conscious of status. How many I can get in my church? How much prestige will I have among so many people?
I drive a Cadillac and you don't.
I think that's the role that they're playing. I think for years they've asked the black ministers to come together in a community, sing right there at the black festivals. And never no cooperation from any of the pastors or ministers. And I don't think it's because of poor organization. I think it's because there's something there that has separated a minister from minister. And then to it's not a false atmosphere, because there has been a lot of conflict between some of the Baptist churches there, and there's been conflict, and I think now that the ministry is divided, and it's divided in its efforts as far as congregational wide.
As a youth, how do you envision in terms of were the needs of youth adequately provided for when you were young versus how you see the needs of youth being provided today in Ypsilanti? Are they any different, or are they better, or are they less?
They're less.
What were the kinds of activities and needs? You know, go ahead.
Because
Mrs.
I think when I was young, if there was a need, the people and the churches got together. Now the people in the church don't get together. Some of the churches don't even have missionaries anymore. And you know, do things for the needy. A lot of ministers, and I guess some of them do, they went beyond their church members. They'd come to your house. You know, you wasn't a member, or you didn't go to church. They'd come visit you. But nowadays, a lot of the ministers, they don't visit only their own flock. Well, if I got it, why, you know, if the way I see it, if I'm already saved and in the church, then you go find somebody else to save. That's the way I feel about it. But they don't come to, in my opinion, they don't come to the people's rescue. Like if a lady, there was a time if someone died in the family, all the churches, ministers would come, they would do what they could. And nowadays, if you don't belong to a church, you may understand you may have to be paid to be buried from a church, to have a thing in a church.
How do you perceive, what did the churches do for youth back then, you know, when you were young?
In terms but they of had a lot of things, well.
Versus today.
Well, our church had a they take us places. You know, the church would have church picnics.
That was the best part.
And the churches would get together. Sometimes we wouldn't go no further than Recreation Park. But there'd be all, you know, all the churches.
Unity.
Would get together and have, hey, we're going to have church picnic. Well, all the churches would have picnic. And it would be very well supervised. Or, of course, people, back in my days, everybody didn't have cars and buses and stuff like that, so they were limited as far as going to different places. But they'd have get-togethers. Once one choir would go over and sing at this church, and they don't do that much anymore. I belong, well, that wasn't a church organization, but I used to sing with the a cappella choir. And that was all the young people from every church. And we had a baseball team. We won state and city championship in Ypsilanti. And what else? We did a lot of things. We We had a bike shop when it was closed. Now, these were the older teenagers, like 18, 19 years old. We'd all rip bikes. And my parents would let us go bike riding. And it would be very well supervised.
What kinds of solutions or alternatives do you see or think about suggesting that might enhance the community life among blacks in Ypsilanti in the area of branch churches, ministerial leadership, education, or whatever? You know, what are some
I think
ideas?
People in Ypsilanti have got afraid of each other. And I know that sounds a little ridiculous, but when I was a kid, there wasn't anywhere we couldn't go at night when I was a young woman. We could go anywhere. We could walk from Jefferson to anywhere we wanted to go, through the field. Nobody never bothered us. Now I'm older, I wouldn't do it now, and not so many young people. They won't do it now either.
I think the whole thing is, and it's not only a citywide thing, it's a national, it's a national breakdown of standards and morals. And I often say, I hope to God that we never get like the affluent society. There was a time that blacks had standards that they kept regardless, you know, of what the affluent society said was all right. Blacks had standards. There was a time when at Perry School, Harriet School, a teacher had to be a church member.
Really?
You see, oh yes, man, teachers were just like preachers.
By what time was this?
This was back when I was going there. This was back in the
40s. Perry School was white, partially white when I went.
And, I remember, man, we had to say pledge allegiance to the flag and the Lord's Prayer, and we had scripture readings. And it is no more. There was a time when we respected older people. Maybe what they were or who they were, but just because they were older, they were Mrs. or Miss or Mr. And it's a breakdown. It's just a breakdown. That's all it is. It's a breakdown, and we become skeptical.
What do you think? What do you think we need to do in order to enhance community life among black folk? What suggestions could, if you were to offer some suggestions for improvement? What
if I was to offer suggestions for improvement, I would start with the church. I would start with the pastor. I would start with the deacon board, and then I would carry it to the street. See?
What about the area of race relations? You know,
as far as race relations, I feel that love begins in the house, and then it goes outdoors. I cannot say that I'm going to love that man across town when I can't love you. We have to learn to love each other. When blacks learn to love blacks, then we worry about loving that white man.
I think black people have got more skeptical.
Love begins here.
Do the white man.
And then it goes over there. But if we can't do it here, ain't no sense us talking about over there. Race relation has to begin in the black community. And there has to be a love for the community and for your fellow man before you can go across town talking about love.
What do you see as some of the changes that might be needed in getting more blacks involved in local politics in this land?
Well, for one thing, and I think this is a that's true, okay. Mm-hmm. One thing that we need to learn, and I would to God that they could have a mass meeting, I think they could get people out, is for the elite blacks, you have a man issue.
And they separate them.
Quit trying to talk above the head of the everyday factory rat. I'm a factory rat, okay? Don't talk above, of course I can deal with it. But you know, they have that look down their nose attitude. Blacks who get in position get that look down their nose attitude. Until they rid themselves of this and say, hey, look here. We're going to do this for the good of everybody. Me, you, everybody else. All of us going to get a piece of the pie. You know, we are going to have to come down level, as old folks used to say, deathbed level honesty, and say, well, this is what we need, and this is what we need from you. It can be done. You see, it can be done.
But the elite, so-called blacks in Ypsilanti, as soon as they get elite and get that piece of money, they move out.
Where do they move to?
Into the white neighborhoods. All of them.
Yeah.
It was the time the school teachers lived down the street and around the corner and three or four streets over. Now they live in white neighborhoods.
Well,
most of them, and they're secluded.
They can move to where they want.
I'm like Mother, now they can bring up their own neighborhoods. They build all these gorgeous houses over in the white folks' neighborhood, build it in their own. It's land over there.
Well,
because my mother built this one. So,
and it's secluded.
Well, she wanted me to live out in the country.
Your mother built this house?
Yes.
Uh-huh. That's where my mother lived.
Uh-huh. See, she lived here, and she lived in my house before this.
But some of her friends tried to get her.
No, I think until black people can be made aware that they're not going to be embarrassed because they don't understand terminologies and policy making, mm-hmm. but at the same time they can have an interest and an input. And not be looked down on and saying, well, you don't understand the situation. But then if they don't understand, explain it to them. Put it in words and terms that they can understand. You see what I mean? I think there's a street language that we have to learn, that blacks have to learn or come back to convey, to communicate.
Could you give me some names of certain, what were the names of important individuals that may have influenced your thinking or helped you, you know, grow and learn? Were there any significant individuals in your life as you were coming up that had a real impact on your life? Like you mentioned, Gene Beatty is one. Were there any others that really had a real impact in a positive way?
Yeah, there's a man, I don't know if he's living now, but there was a sixth grade teacher I had, and he had, Du Bois Patton.
He's black?
He's black.
Okay.
And he's a sixth grade teacher. He had a great impact on me. And I think I was a devil. I was something in the sixth grade. But this man took time, you know. This man took time and kept us after school. There was about three or four of us boys. And we always was getting into something. But he always had time to keep us after school, sit down and talk to us, and even go to blows with us. You know, I mean go to blows. You know, he said, okay. And there was four of us one day. And he said, okay. He said, you think I don't care? He said, you think that I'm doing this for meanness? He said, well, I don't care what you think. He said, but you fellas are going to be something. And you know, out of the four of us, really, I think we turned out pretty good. Ain't none of us been to jail. We got one. One is a foreman out at Ford's. One is a UAW rep. And me, before I retired from the ministry, I was pastoring. I pastored for 12 years.
Are you a minister?
No, not now.
Okay.
I used to be.
At one time you were a minister?
Yes, I was a pastor.
Where, in Ypsilanti?
No.
Okay.
No, never pastored in Ypsilanti. I pastored in Jackson.
Okay.
Eastern Detroit.
Okay.
But not in Ypsilanti. But Du Bois Patton, I think he had a big influence on my life. back then. Another A.C. Green, Hobbit Glover. Boy, they used to hold me, my mama whooped my butt. They were my big brothers.
Really are your biggest influence.
And yeah, well, you know, like, mom and dad.
Now,
was.
Mrs. Evans was a big influence.
Yeah.
And so was
I think my mother was the greatest influence on my life.
Yeah.
She really held the Christian principles.
Her name was Campbell when I went to school. Miss Campbell. She used to come to visit and sit down and talk. And she'd tell you what your child needed to study and what they didn't. And Miss Gersey would do the same thing. I don't know if she's still doing it or not. I don't even know if she's still
doing it. She's retired.
I know. Oh, yeah, she,
you know, she married Wally Wong.
Yeah, I know she
did. I didn't know that. Don't put that on tape. But anyway, that's just old talk.
Yeah, yeah. What I'd like to do then is like to thank you for allowing me the opportunity to interview you. But what I'd like to do is this, is have what we discussed today. I'm going to have it transcribed, typed on paper. I'm going to bring it back here to you all so you can look at what has been typed so that you can add or delete what you feel should be there so that it will more adequately reflect, okay, what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's okay. What I'll do.
Well, see, if you give us enough time, what we can do, we can